It is the Doomsday Podcast, Matt Mosley and Ed Werder, in the late hours, immediately following the first round. Ed has been in coverage since 6-something this morning, I believe, was his first hit. And then, Ed, how many hours was it between your first hit and then when the Cowboys went on the clock at number 10? I think people love that window inside the life of Ed Werder.
Well, my first contact with Bristol was at 5:50 this morning for a 6:02 a.m. Live shot on two of the five teams I was covering, which was Dallas and Denver. And then I would say it was probably 16 hours before the Cowboys made their pick, made the first trade in this draft, and then ultimately made their pick after helping a division rival secure a Heisman Trophy winning wide receiver, which is something I don't think the Cowboys have probably ever done before, and probably had a little disdain for doing in the moment. But it's a long day, and a lot of it was the whole Aaron Rodgers thing, because there was a time as the draft was about to start where it seemed like Denver was heavily involved and might possibly acquire Aaron Rodgers. But to this point, nothing's come of that.
Yeah, and there were even reports out there, oh, this is close, and this is this and that, and that's why we got to be careful, and we only trust people like Ed Werder. We don't want to take some of these other offshoots. And but, Ed, I did think about you when all that excitement came over. Who's Denver going to take? Which quarterback are they going to take? And, of course, we know now who they ended up taking. And I would say, to your point, Ed, and we'll hear in a little bit, we'll break down all the Cowboys pick. We'll have plenty of time to do that. But you having witnessed and been at the front lines of that whole Brett Favre thing, I mean, today there was a funny little thing, the sequence of events that happened. There was a Tim Tebow story that seemed kind of big all of a sudden, that Jacksonville was looking at him as a possible tight end.
I also covered the Broncos when they drafted Tim Tebow in the first round.
Yes. So that happened. And then the Aaron Rodgers, he's unhappy, he wants out, he'll either not play for them or do Jeopardy. That story took hold. And I would have to say, most times a story like, there's few stories that kind of overshadow the draft. Aaron Rodgers is big enough to overshadow the draft. So this was what you were monitoring throughout the day. And I'm sure, Ed, on some of your hits, you were being asked about the whole Aaron Rodgers thing.
Well, and he not only overshadowed the draft, but it was part of the draft, because anybody who was going to be able to compensate Green Bay to their satisfaction, whether it was San Francisco, which had, you know, traded three first round picks to get the third overall pick, or Denver, which had the 10th pick, if they were going to be able to make a move and get Rodgers, you would assume that some of this, you know, high value draft collateral would be involved in the transaction. And even as late as Denver coming on the clock at 10, I was, you know, texting Chris Mortensen, my colleague, and saying, well, if they take Justin Fields or Mac Jones here, then we'll know they're not involved for Aaron Rodgers. But they didn't do that. They took Patrick Surtain, who was one of the two corners that the Cowboys valued highly, had it gotten to 10. I think it's still out there. I think Denver is still a possibility if they can't get this resolved and Rodgers doesn't want to return to Green Bay. I think Denver still, you know, fits nicely as a potential landing spot for him. I mean, how amazing would it be if the Denver Broncos had John Elway, Peyton Manning, and Aaron Rodgers and didn't draft any of them?
All of this is fascinating. All right, it is time. We got to get into, we are the Doomsday Podcast, and we got a lot to talk about. The Cowboys did select someone, not at number 10, but at number 12. Chris Gross and Frito Nation Productions and Mark Frito Friedman, please play the music. It is the Doomsday Podcast, and Ed Werder, Matt Mosley with you late into the evening. The draft has just been completed. It's always the same group, it seems like, you know, Ed, we look at like it's the Saints or it's the Ravens or somebody like that, because they're always winning the most, so they're always picking late, and so it's interesting to see, and somehow a great running back always falls to either the Ravens or the Steelers, and that happened. Najee Harris went to the Steelers at I believe like maybe number 24 tonight. But what is most interesting of to us, and you were covering this all day for ESPN, Cowboys get to, you know, they're picking at 10. All right, Ed, let's go through this. What were you thinking as it started to all kind of unfold there? J.C. Horn goes to Carolina, and they're all hanging out wherever they hang out, Spartanburg, or maybe it was actually in Charlotte, wherever their group, their complex is. And I see Matt Rhule, my old pal, milling around there. They get J.C. Horn. I see somebody from the Cowboys, I'm talking about Cowboys.com, go, well, now it's a sure shot for the Cowboys that they'll have either, you know, they'll have their shot at Surtain. Well, it didn't happen that way. You having to cover the Broncos and cover the Cowboys, what were you kind of, how, what were you hearing as all that was unfolding?
Well, a little bit to my surprise, given that situation. So I think everybody covering the Cowboys and the Cowboys, you know, kind of either allowed this to happen or created this expectation that the top two picks for them, what they wanted to have happen was they wanted to get their pick of any defensive player at 10 that there was in the entire draft, that they hoped all offensive players would be picked in the first nine choices. Mm-hmm. And instead at 8, Carolina picks J.C. Horn, who I think the Cowboys had a little bit above Patrick Surtain. And then the Broncos pick Patrick Surtain at 9. And so here are the Cowboys lose both of the corners right in front of them. And there's not a team in football that needs corners more than Dallas. And that's obvious from the fact that, you know, they allowed 27 touchdown passes to wide receivers last season. That's the most in the NFL. And they allowed 34 touchdown passes overall against their defense, the most in franchise history. And so Surtain and Horn made perfect sense, you know, for Dan Quinn taking over this Cowboys defense. And then here go the two players that everybody presumed that they wanted with the pick. And then compounding the disappointment is the division rival Eagles and Giants both took receivers in the first round, Devontae Smith and Kadarius Toney. And intensifying that misery, the Eagles actually took the Heisman Trophy winner, Smith, with the pick the Cowboys traded to them. You know, the Cowboys moved down two spots and acquired a third-round pick. That gives them five picks in the top 100. And then, you know, they get a very dynamic linebacker in Micah Parsons. The Cowboys are claiming in their press conferences tonight, and maybe we'll hear some of this, Jerry Jones claims that Micah Parsons was the number one ranked defensive player on their draft board. I had not heard that. I had not heard his name attached to the Cowboys in that significant a way. Jerry likes to, you know, go prove his claims to the media at times and drag reporters into the draft room and show them the board. As far as I know, that didn't happen in this case. I certainly wasn't invited. But I do think Parsons is a good player. I talked to one general manager who went to his workout and called him an athletic freak, said he weighed 240 pounds, ran a 4.39 40, said he can affect the game as a blitzer, short tackler running sideline to sideline, said he has to improve in pass coverage and in using his hands when he's playing in the box. So sounds like he's an interesting player. I think Mike McCarthy made some reference to him possibly being, you know, Bobby Wagner in Dan Quinn's reinvention of the Seattle Seahawks Legion of Boom defense here in Dallas. We'll see if it if it gets to that point. But I think you made a good point about the number of linebackers and the high number of picks that they've devoted to this position.
Yeah, they have. And that is, by the way, when he said Bobby Wagner, I was listening to that news conference. And you know what I heard him say? In my mind, I heard Bobby Carpenter. And I thought, oh, really? Is that what we want to bring up right now? Another first-round linebacker that did not work out, who's a good friend of the show, so I won't say too much on that. Now, Ed, before we – I do want to get into what you just talked about. And listen, it's kind of throwing – good money after bad, you know, this linebacker situation. But before we do that, let's hear Jerry Jones make that point you were talking about. Jerry Jones discussing how Micah Parsons was higher on their board than either two of those quarterbacks that went before him.
We've been talking about the quarterbacks being gone at 8 and 9 since for days, but certainly today is the day coming. And we intensively talked about the possibility all day long and be ready. And we're really, there were no surprises here or no consternation about that under certain circumstances we wanted to make this pick.
Was Parsons rated higher than the corners on your board?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes. Definitely.
All right. And so, and to your point, Ed, you know, there was some joking of somebody actually made the point. Now, you kind of always say that about your board, and Jerry kind of joked about he could go flip the lights on, but you'd have to pay your way in. So we don't know for sure. This is a little bit sounded like Jerry, but this Micah Parsons. And boy, I love how these like things are glossed over. Once you have a player, and I think it's a great player, but the other day, Ed, when we heard them talking about these players, they said what? They're going to ding a player. They said if they opted out this last year, it would count against them. Well, they didn't count it against Parsons.
They said they were compromised prospects.
Yes. And
yet this is the number one guy on their draft board on the defense and a guy worth their 12th overall pick.
And
this sounds like maybe a little revisionist history. So Jerry was either lying then or he's lying now, but whatever.
Yeah.
If the guy can play, he can play, and we'll see.
We shall see. Now, one other point to go back just a minute. They do this thing with their division rivals, as you pointed out, with the Eagles. And then I thought on Twitter, you kind of had a good point and a little bit of a funny point is the fact that now the Cowboys let the Eagles come up and get the Heisman Trophy winner, DeVonta Smith, who some people would argue is the best receiver in this draft. Obviously, he was the third taken, but I'm saying there is an argument to be made. He's the best, and the Eagles have screwed that position up. This guy can flat-out play. So not only did the Cowboys, Ed, as you so well pointed out, they didn't get one of their corners, and oh, by the way, their division rival, they let them jump up and secure a great wide receiver. I mean, this was a disastrous.
Twice a year.
Yes. Yeah, that they have to
it
play
twice. It has disastrous overtones, but I guess the way they viewed it is, well, if we sit where we are and we take the player, we don't want a receiver. We've invested too much in receivers, you know, as it is with Amari Cooper and CeeDee Lamb essentially being their first-round picks the last 2 years, and then Michael Gallup being a third. So they're not going to take DeVonta Smith. So is it – and if we don't let the Eagles come up and get him, then the Giants are going to take him. So either way, he's probably going to wind up in our division and us playing him twice a year. So should we extract a third-round pick from our division rival for the cost of assuring that they get him and the Giants don't? So you can argue whether that was shrewd on their part or not, but it does seem it's a little uncomfortable, I think, to not address a position of great need at cornerback and then help one of your division rivals get a player who can exploit that when you play them twice a year. And, you know, I mean, Jalen Hurts is, you know, kind of entering a prove-it season with the Eagles as the starting quarterback now that Carson Wentz is gone. And he was teammates with DeVonta Smith. And, you know, they combined for like 12 touchdowns between the two of them in a single season. And the thing that the Eagles, their most glaring weakness on offense is the wide receiver position, even though they drafted Jalen Reagor last year in the first round. I mean, if you look at how bad the Eagles were in terms of their wide receiver production last year, their catch percentage was 56%. That's 31st in the NFL. Receiving yards, 30th in the NFL. Receptions, 29th in the NFL. The Eagles receivers combined for 2,082 receiving yards, the third fewest in the NFL behind the Patriots and the Ravens. And the Cowboys play a role in helping them find a solution for that.
Yeah, they did. And be careful with those mentions of Reagor because Chris Gross.
He's a TCU kid.
Chris Gross is a TCU kid, very, very defensive of a young man like Rager.
Well, they should have taken Justin Jefferson, but they didn't.
Did Justin Jefferson have a good year last year?
I think he was fairly decent, yeah.
I thought he put up pretty good numbers.
I think he may have done things only Randy Moss had ever done as a rookie, but I may be overspeaking.
So the Cowboys, just to put this together, they took a guy in Jalen Smith, a second round pick. They were very, and he had to have a red shirt year in
2016.
It took some sort of miracle surgery to bring him back, and we're not totally sure. They signed him to an extension, and he really wasn't great this last year. And then Van Der Esch can't stay healthy, and they just lost Sean Lee, just retired, a man who, though we liked him a whole lot, had a nice career at times, but he had major health issues throughout his career. And so, Ed, this is a position they kind of keep having to go back to the well. They addressed it somewhat with this Keanu Neal, who, I don't know, he's either going to play safety or linebacker. Maybe he's a little bit of a hybrid-type player, but in a sense, you know, you thought, oh my gosh, they've got to get better on defense. And maybe they will. Maybe stocking up on these picks and having 3 third-round picks. And who knows, maybe they could use that to move up a little bit tomorrow in the second round and secure somebody they really need, like a defensive lineman or like a cornerback. But I would say, Ed, I don't think any fan of the Cowboys would really be doing cartwheels over sort of adding to a position that they can't seem to get right.
Yeah. And I think you're hoping that, you know, Dan Quinn is better at arranging a defense than, you know, Mike Nolan was, or, you know, Chris Richard was, or Rod Marinelli's been. And maybe he'll prove capable of that. He did have some, even though they didn't have very good numbers last year in Atlanta, and ultimately the failure of the defense got him fired as the head coach, which, you know, didn't deter the Cowboys coming off the worst defensive season in franchise history. You know, there's an obvious, a lot of confidence in the management of the franchise about what Dan Quinn can do. And the fact that they remain sort of dedicated to the cause of, you know, bringing in defensive talent, you know, one of their fallback options when the two corners went was to, you know, trade back and take Rashawn Slater, an offensive tackle from Northwestern. Mm. They could have justified that given, you know, the recent injury problems of Lael Collins and Tyron Smith and Zach Martin. They could have justified that, but they didn't. They stuck to their determination to try to improve the personnel on the defensive side of the ball. And I think Parsons will do that, although he's only made 13 college starts and he really hasn't played, you know, kind of as a stack linebacker. He's kind of an open field kind of guy. And that's what I thought Keanu Neal was going to be. Mm-hmm. And I mean, at least he's a healthy player. You know, they took a lot of injury risk with Jalen Smith and with Leighton Van Der Esch. You know, people in the league took him off their board because they knew he had spinal stenosis and that would be, you know, a risk he carried throughout his career and that it might eventually shorten or end his career. And he's missed, you know, an awful lot of games to this point. And now I think this jeopardizes his future with the franchise. From a positive point of view, it creates all kinds of incentive for Leighton Van Der Esch to have a great year, because on Monday, the Cowboys have to decide if they're going to pick up his fifth-year option, which would guarantee his salary this season and next. I would say they'd be disinclined to do that at this point with Parsons now being added to the roster.
I think you're right. And the wolf killer, or whatever we call him, the wolf hunter, we might be
wolf killer.
We might be losing him.
I mean, he's been a fantastic player, you know, before he became injury-prone. You know, he brought a lot of enthusiasm. He brought a lot of charisma and playmaking. But, you know, having neck and shoulder surgeries as a linebacker when you're tackling with your head and your neck all the time, you know, that's just a difficult proposition. And you just wonder if he's going to fulfill his potential and, you know, how long a career he's going to have.
And by the way, Ed, I did it at some point. You had a lot on your plate, so you probably couldn't follow my tweets. But I said, I think the Cowboys will either go with Slater here, or they will want to go with the guy who has some character concerns in Parsons. And they, of course, went with Micah Parsons. And, you know, I don't know what to make of that. He did something in high school, and that's a really weird deal, like a cafeteria or something. I don't know what happened with that. The freshman year thing he did at Penn State was disturbing. That was like there's a lawsuit involved, and that was a hazing type allegations. And if you look into that one, that one's a little disturbing. I mean, I pledged a fraternity at my school, at Baylor. There was some hazing going on back in the day, but this was a little different level hazing than what I was accustomed to. So anyway, I don't know what we should make of that, Ed. Is there anybody you talked to on the Micah Parsons front? I kind of felt bad for you since you had done so much cornerback work, and then they don't even get the cornerback. Did any of these character concerns? I would just hear people say it in passing. This guy's got some character concerns. He would have gone fifth or sixth, but he's got some character concerns. But nobody would really ever connect the dots for me. So I started having to Google around a little bit tonight, and I'm like, ooh, I don't like that. I don't like the hazing stuff. But anything, Ed?
Right now, and a teammate allegedly filed suit, allegedly pulled a knife in his own defense.
Correct. Brandished a knife. Yeah.
I believe at some point Parsons was temporarily suspended from the program, and the whole thing remains unresolved. But
he was on probation. Parsons, he was on probation for 7 months, right, but not ever apart from the team. It was kind of a
So no, I obviously haven't done a lot of research on that because I didn't think I'd be dealing with this player. But it was not mentioned to me as a concern among the general managers that I did speak to about Parsons. And I think it's worth noting, and that we have a journalistic obligation to mention, that when Parsons was asked about that tonight at his press conference, he's continued to deny any wrongdoing and said he knew this was not going to hurt him in the draft because he knew the allegations were false.
Okay, that's a good setup. Knew the allegations were false. That is a pretty interesting response there. But and I guess if the lawsuit ever proceeds, and we'll get to the bottom of it a little bit more in the justice. But I do want to say real quick, we do have some the back and forth that happened on the media call. The local media were allowed to have a little session with Micah Parsons moments after he was selected. Let's let the doomsdayers, our folks, hear a little bit from Micah here, and we won't play the whole thing, but I kind of want to at least get you a little back and forth here to hear what Micah sounds like. And then, by the way, on Friday, I believe there's going to be a Welcome to Dallas sort of news conference that'll take place with Micah at 3 p.m. Central Time. Let's listen to a little bit of what Micah Parsons had to say.
Here you put into the world you wanted to be a cowboy. Why did you do that, or what was going through your mind when you said that?
I wanted to finish what I started. You know, I had a great game, the Memphis game, and I wanted to, you know, start in Dallas, and I fell in love with that stadium, fell in love with everything they had to offer in Dallas. I knew what type of system I was coming into, who I wanted to play next to, the competition I wanted to go against every day. Offensively, I think I'm gonna go against the best offense in America this whole season. So it's only gonna make me better, and we're gonna go from there. And I knew Jerry Jones, what he was about. He wants to win, and he got a winner. So.
What do you think about the competition at linebacker? Yourself now, Layton, and
Taylor. The competition is extremely high. You know, I'm never going to shy away from the competition. I'm going to lean on them guys to get better, learn the system, you know, find my way to fit in as best as possible. And, you know, we're going to get to work. I think if all three of us can find a way to play together, all three of us can play healthy, it'll be something scary.
Mike, what kind of answers did you have to give to teams when you're dealing with the allegations that came up in Penn State?
You know, they did all their background checks. I let them know the truth. There's nothing pending against me. There's nothing I would lie about. You know, they did a thorough background check. Everything was dropped or, you know, all that type of stuff. They were false allegations. I never got to speak on my name because, you know, it's hard to say that while you're in the process. But, you know, obviously they did their background. They know I'm not a character concern at all. And, you know, I think I'm a great person. I'm going to keep becoming a better father and person every day, not for myself, but, you know, for my entire family. And the Cowboy Nation, you know, I got to represent them every day now, too.
Were you concerned at all that this was hanging out there and that I might drop a little bit.
You know, concerned, no, because, you know, you only get concerned if it's true. You know, I knew it's false, and if I were to fall, it's because God wanted me to fall. You know, I believe everything happens for a reason. Like, I'm literally meant here for a reason. I put in the air. I spoke this into existence. Now, I got a great opportunity to do something great here.
All right, there he is, and welcome to town. Micah Parsons, and Ed, that was kind of interesting that he played his final game. He didn't know it at the time, but at the Cotton Bowl at AT&T Stadium at the end of the 2019 season and had like 14 tackles, two sacks, had a big, big game. And even back then, I think, you know, he kind of came from some folks that were maybe Cowboys fit, although he's from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. I mean, he was up there in Eagles territory, but whatever. He seemed even back then to have a little bit of a premonition. What if I ended up playing here someday? And so he ends up with the Cowboys. But that was, I would say, Ed, 2019, that guy was a monster. I mean, he was one of those, you talk about linebacker you and some of the great ones that have played there. This was the latest in that crew.
Well, if he can be like Devin White, you know, and have that kind of impact that the former LSU first round draft choice has had on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers defense, then this would obviously be a worthwhile pick. And, you know, now the Cowboys have what, second round pick and three third rounders tomorrow night. And like you suggested, they, you know, they might have the opportunity to move up. There's still plenty of, you know, good defensive players on the board, and including the safety that everybody likes, Trevon Moehrig, Christian Barmore, the defensive tackle from Alabama, that at one point a lot of people thought the Cowboys might have interest in him. I know, you know, the Cowboys had two of the worst rushing defensive games in franchise history last year, 307 yards allowed against the Browns, and 294 yards allowed against the Ravens. And after one of those games, I talked to one of the head coaches who said, hey, the Cowboys need a couple of defensive tackles. And so there's still an opportunity to address that position as well in this draft as soon as tomorrow.
Yeah, and that's going to happen, and we will talk about that a little bit. Steve, Ed, we were the other day, we had Jim Nagy on from ESPN. He's the Senior Bowl Executive Director, and we talked about, you know, some various things and how this whole thing was going to go. And I thought one of the interesting things he said to us was that Trey Lance might be the most volatile stock in all the draft. And of course, with a volatile stock, that could go up, that could go down. And there he was at number three. Ed, that was our first true kind of whoa moment of the evening when, you know, it's just funny. Somehow we get it in our heads. Mac Jones, going to be Mac Jones. We've talked about it for weeks and weeks. Got to be Mac Jones to San Francisco. And then lo and behold, they take Trey Lance. Even based on our conversation the other day, Ed, how surprised were you when that pick was made that Trey Lance was the third quarterback off the board?
Well, I think it's pretty remarkable that the 49ers would surrender three first-round draft choices to move up to three and pick the guy who seems least likely to have an immediate impact on a football team in terms of he's only thrown 318 passes at the college level, which is the fewest of a first round draft choice in 40 years. And he's only started 17 games. Now, in those 17 games, he demonstrated, you know, great ability. I think when he does play, that defending the 49ers is going to be a whole different challenge than it's ever been with Jimmy Garoppolo as a starting quarterback. And they do still have Garoppolo. And assuming they keep him, you know, there will be no immediate pressure on Lance to play as a rookie or not early in his rookie season. So I was surprised. I assume that they went up there to get Mac Jones. You know, Mike Shanahan Kyle Shanahan's father has been heavily involved in the quarterback evaluation for the 49ers. And it just seemed like while he, you know, he drafted RG3 in Washington, that's really not what he wanted to do. And that's more the player that I see Trey Lance being. Mac Jones was a guy who is regarded as a quick decision maker, an accurate thrower, you know, nimble in the pocket, but not a great athlete. And I kind of thought that's what the Shanahans liked in their quarterback. I know they like to get him out of the pocket, but Trey Lance has played a lot of the snaps he has played in college were under center, and the 49ers rank in the top three in terms of their quarterbacks taking snaps from under center. So it's a good fit that way. And it'll just be interesting to see how they evolve him. But I think an awful lot went into this evaluation, but I personally was surprised that it wasn't Mac Jones, because I think when they made the trade, I think Mac Jones was the guy.
You know, it's interesting. You said RG3, and you know, I watched every game he played and got to know him a little bit. I would say that RG3 at that point in his career was a lot more fragile than this guy. This guy, RG3, was always a track athlete who played football. This guy's a football player. He's bigger. Right. I thought it was interesting to hear tonight, Ed, somebody said, when this guy takes off running, he scores touchdowns. And I thought, okay, all right. Is that what we think about? I mean, now maybe Lamar Jackson. That's about the only guy we might think is going to take off and score touchdowns. And I don't think Trey Lance is Lamar Jackson. He's mobile, and he may be a little more mobile even than Mahomes. He doesn't have the arm talent. Nobody right now has the, other than maybe Aaron Rodgers, has the arm talent that Mahomes has. But it is interesting how when a guy goes to a certain place, I think sometimes the analysis comes in like, whoa, we got to say some really incredible things about this guy. And so tonight they're like, this guy scores touchdowns when he takes off running. But this is a major projection. As you said, it's hard to imagine him stepping in and being successful right away. Whereas with New England, they got a quarterback who, considering what he did at Alabama, you know, the Belichick-Saban relationship, you know, it almost seemed like, Ed, to me, Belichick used his sort of evil magic to kind of put a spell on everybody. Nobody take Mac. And then there he was. They take him, and I think it might have been you tweeting. I was following you throughout the evening that Belichick, you know, he does not have a history. Obviously,
he's never drafted a quarterback in the first round, but he's drafted more Alabama players by far than anybody else in the league.
Was he with Bill when he took Drew Bledsoe? He was on the staff, maybe. I'm just trying to think.
He wasn't the head coach.
Yeah,
so that was 1993. Parcells was the head coach when they drafted Drew Bledsoe, number one.
All right. Anybody before, I want to talk about tomorrow with the Cowboys and what we kind of think might happen. Was there any other team, Ed, that you were kind of on the Broncos? You were taking a long look at that thing. Was there anything else that you saw? It seemed like Kiper was most like the one where he really reacted like major reach was the enormous tackle out of Alabama who will probably be moved to guard, Leatherwood, who
made the Raiders.
To the Raiders, yeah. That was the one he was like, well, I had him going, you know, second round, or there was a 60% chance he was going to go at 46 overall. Any other first-round story that really grabbed your attention, other than I thought the Bears coming up to get Justin Fields was pretty huge.
That's what I was going to point out, too. I mean, you're talking about Ryan Pace, who, by the way, went to Flower Mound Marcus High School. You know, he and Matt Nagy, the head coach, have been basically put on notice that they have to win this year or they'll be fired by the Bears. In fact, they feel fortunate they weren't fired by the Bears after last season. So what is this, like the fifth or sixth different quarterback that Ryan Pace has gone out and gotten in an attempt to get the Bears to win? And you know, getting Justin Fields where they did, they moved up from, what, 20 to go up and get him with the Giants pick at 12. And so, I mean, he's got to play. He's got to play right away. And, you know, he's got to do all the things that Mitch Trubisky proved incapable of doing for Matt Nagy and Ryan Pace to keep their jobs with the Bears next season.
Yeah, well said. And, by the way, you brought up Flower Mound. I don't think I told you this. I was at a birthday party the other night at right there off Tour 18, number 13. And so I thought, man, I'm sure I'm close to Werder's house right now. But I think you were
off. I played out there a few times.
Yeah, yeah. It was a beautiful, beautiful homes out there. The course looked fine. Although people are like now listening to, I don't know, maybe I'm getting too old or something, but people now listen to loud music while they play golf, and I'm annoyed by that completely. Okay, Ed, Cowboys have now, they have three picks in the second and third rounds, okay? They've got number 44 in the second round, and then, of course, in the third round, they've got 75 and 84. Now, there's going to be some temptation to package some things and move up. And I'm trying to think, you know, obviously defensive line. Did Barmore get picked tonight? He didn't, did he?
No.
Okay.
He's not
so
been picked yet.
I would say that's got to be a name where
Asante
we take
Samuel, the cornerback.
Correct.
From, Florida State.
Yeah. I think somebody from North Carolina I like. But they're really going to have to take a peek. And so picking up that extra ammunition, you know, Jerry kind of likes to tell you, we're thinking about doing this. Pick. I mean, so they could either stay right there at number 44 and see if one of those really talented players falls to them, or use some of the ammunition and come up the board. But I think what we would both agree on, Ed, and I want to get your take on this, is I think, okay, you got Parsons, and you need him step in start for you immediately. You need another defensive starter. I mean, it's not like, well, let's get a developmental guy. You kind of need a guy that'll step in and start for you immediately. I mean, I don't think there's any way around it.
I think that could be a guy like Barmore at defensive tackle. It could be Asante Samuel Jr. at corner, unless, you know, you're going to go out and sign Casey Hayward or Richard Sherman to play corner opposite Trayvon Diggs. Then I think they do need a corner one way or another who's a starting caliber player. And so I think those are possibilities. And then I think the other thing Jim Nagy said relative to the conversation we're having now is he kind of suggested that this draft is about 75 players deep. And then all of the opt-outs and all of the unknowns about medicals that exist because – you know, there were no team visits. There was no scouting combine. Will come into play. And that's the point at which teams may start to trade out for picks next year. Mm. And so it'll be interesting to see because, as you just mentioned, I think the Cowboys have two more picks before they hit 75. It'll be interesting to see if they can use them to move inside of 75 and maybe, like you said, target a player high in the second round tomorrow. And give up some of those thirds, or if they take some of the thirds and get out and use them for next year.
All right, I got a guy for you that we brought up the other day, and I think he did play in the Senior Bowl, so our man was high on him. He's a little partial to the Senior Bowl guys. Quinn Meinerz, M-E-I-N-E-R-Z, 6'3", 320 pounds. I think they'll move him in. I think he'll obviously play guard in the NFL. But he is the guy that that Nagy was going on and on, and he played at Wisconsin Whitewater. Oh, yeah. For the Warhawks there at Wisconsin Whitewater. And this guy was like 6th, 7th round maybe, and kind of through the Senior Bowl and through some workouts. I mean, he dominated at the Senior Bowl. You know, where they said that guy tonight they drafted, Leatherwood, well, we had some concerns at the Senior Bowl. This sucker showed up and said, I may be from Whitewater, and I may be used to canoeing through the rapids, but I'm here to dominate. So that's a kid, Ed, that I'm kind of excited about. The young Meinerz, okay? Quinn Meinerz, 22-year-old. I just want to get on the record with him, as well as the technician, William Bradley King from Baylor. Now, but that's probably about a 4th-round pick.
And let me see if I can find this quickly enough. But somebody told me the other day,
research,
that the hot player at corner later rounds of this draft is from SMU.
Oh, and SMU, I mean, Mustang.
I need to keep an eye on him, and I am not finding those notes right now.
No, it's okay.
Unfortunately,
it's okay. You got a lot. You got a lot. I can buy some time for you because his coach.
I don't know if you can buy me enough.
His DB's coach at SMU. Well, yeah, see, you'd have more luck Google right now than looking through all those paper notes. But is Kevin Curtis, and he just went from SMU to Baylor. And this guy.
Here it is. I found it.
Good. See. All right.
Yeah. Very nice.
Back to you, Ed.
What did you say that guy's name was?
Well, Kevin Curtis was his coach at SMU, was his position coach.
I was told someone, the super sleeper cornerback is in our backyard. Brandon Stevens of SMU, running back transfer from UCLA, played the last two seasons at cornerback for the Mustangs. He's 6 foot, 210, ran 4.45, has all the height, weight, speed needed, probably a third round pick. So there's one for you.
Third round pick. Boy, I like that. I like that. Is there anything else you need me to say so you can look through some more notes?
No, I was going to be so much better on this podcast if the Cowboys had gotten one of these corners. In fact, I think I told you I had it all set up. I covered Joe Horn quite a bit when he was with the Saints as a wide receiver.
Let's still have him on.
Mike McCarthy. Yeah. And he had agreed to give me an exclusive interview if his son was drafted here. And he had already kind of talked more than he intended to. So I already had some material in the event Joe changed his mind and didn't want to do the interview that I was going to be able to share. And I had a lot of information from other defensive coordinators about the top two corners. But those guys went at 8 and 9. Mm-hmm. And so it's somewhat irrelevant to Cowboys fans now.
Let me look at what time it is as we record this. It's past midnight, 12:08. Let's call Joe real quick. Was that good? Can we call Joe Horn? What was it like, Joe, to almost make it to the Cowboys? Well, it's going to be interesting, and we'll react. We'll do another one where we react to the entire draft. We'll see what young Micah Parsons has to say. I had to laugh. I always laugh at because I think. Sometimes reporters feel like they have to ask about off-the-field issues, but I liked Clarence's approach tonight. He said something like, can you tell us anything about the quote-unquote off-the-field incidents? It's like, I don't think but anyway, the kid has said.
So you're diminishing it as you ask about it. It's serious enough that you feel an obligation to ask about it, but you want to diminish it. So you don't offend the player you're going to be covering potentially for the next decade.
Yes, that's what it came across as. But I started reading about it, and I was like, okay. All right, we need to look into this. Micah Parsons, the newest Dallas Cowboy, will be in Dallas tomorrow, and excitement over that. And I like, Ed, I would say on some of the players real quick, fashion choices, obviously. By the way, I finally got around to reading that Trevor. The whole SI article, and I had kind of made fun of some stuff and thought, oh, I can't believe people are questioning this kid's love of football and all. Did you ever read it, Ed? Last night I just was up late because I have trouble sleeping, and I finally got around to reading the Trevor Lawrence SI cover story on, and I got to say, and he went number one overall, but he'll be fine. It was weird. I mean, it was flat out weird. Like, I was kind of taken up for the kid until I read the article last night. And I'm like, now, sometimes a writer will lead a kid down a path. Ed, you and I both have writing backgrounds. And the whole premise turned into this.
What's this technique you're talking about?
Sometimes we have an angle. And this writer's angle was to kind of like, he's more than football. But at some point, I was reading this thing, and I'm like, whoa, Trevor needed to put the brakes on. Because at some point, it's like, I don't really need this.
He did that a few days later after the article came out.
He had to get a statement out there. I really do love football. Golly.
This is Urban Meyer football. Jaguar football.
Did you see the ESPN weird like animation tonight? Now they'll do some fun stuff during Monday Night Football sometimes, but there was some odd Jacksonville stuff like right before the draft. Were you watching that, Ed? I mean, you're on ESPN. I think you have to watch it. But they were like Urban Meyer would jump in the water, and then they had people it was like talking about all their, like, maybe quarterback issues that I'm trying to think what it was. There was some weird animation. I don't know. You don't have to comment on that, Ed. I just, it was
probably
really,
in my best interest not to. Not to do that.
No, I'm pretty good. It looks, the animation looked fine. It was just very strange, and they made Urban Meyer look like a, I don't know. It didn't look like Urban. Okay, Ed. Anything else you need to add as we prepare for day two of the Cowboys draft? Any sort of parting shots or final notes on the Cowboys draft or the entire NFL draft?
I feel like I took my shots early in this one. So I didn't save a parting shot. I just think it'll be interesting to see what direction they go and whether they, you know, continue to remain committed to rebuilding the defense and giving Dan Quinn the talent he thinks he needs to, you know, balance out this team.
Is Aaron Rodgers a Green Bay Packer next season?
Yes.
You think he plays for the Pack? Okay. All right. Because he sounds, it seems like he's digging in. Have those Jeopardy episodes come out yet that he hosted?
Yes, they've already aired.
Have you seen them? Did you see any of it? I'm just curious how
I
you did.
I don't watch that kind of television, but
I don't know why you had to say it like that.
If Favre was hosting, I might have watched it. No, I didn't. I didn't see that.
All right.
You seem to be having a real difficulty bringing this to an end for some reason.
Well, I just don't want it to end. And I know you want it to end because you've been at it since 6 this morning. I didn't get quite started that early. I had a radio.
I'm going to go right from this to my next live shot tomorrow morning if we don't bring it into it soon.
I'll show you a live shot, sir. All right, there he is. Ed Werder, Chris Gross, Mark Frito Friedman from Frito Nation Productions. I'm Matt Mosley saying good night and good luck.